Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. And joining me as co-host tonight, Emmy-nominated legal and political analyst, Dean Johnson. 2 weeks ago, Bay Area communities held local primary elections. San Francisco voters overwhelmingly endorsed Proposition H, recalling progressive District Attorney Cheza Bodine. At the same time, in two neighboring counties, voters turned away from incumbent sheriffs in favor of a candidate touting progressive reforms. And in two counties, contested races for District Attorney resulted in re-election of incumbents, each with differing policies towards criminal justice. Tonight, we discuss the implications of the election for criminal justice reform statewide and Bay Area politics. Dean?
Good evening, everyone. Right you are, Jeffrey. We have a true political conundrum here. In the face of mass incarceration, calls to defund police, liberalization of criminal laws, the most progressive city in the nation, San Francisco, tosses out its most progressive elected official, the guy in charge of criminal justice. At the same time, relatively conservative counties like San Mateo reject established mainstream incumbents. Was this bad policy, bad timing, or just bad luck? Or was it personal? And what does this mean for the progressive politics of the Bay Area? Is this the beginning of a backlash? Or is this the foreshadowing of more progressive changes?
This is a sensitive topic with passionate arguments from multiple perspectives. As always, we want you, our most important guest, to be part of this conversation. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Bear in mind that just as a physician won't diagnose your family member based on a phone call, our attorney guests can't provide you precise legal advice. They lack all the facts relating to your given case. However, we're happy to pass along the legal principles to assist you in your decision-making. And while their legal guidance mightn't be their positions of their employers or their clients, our attorney guests are here to help. Dean?
As you said, Jeff, this is a topic that can be approached from multiple perspectives. And tonight, we have a truly outstanding panel of guests, each of whom approaches the issue from his own unique and highly informed perspective. Mark Simon is a political writer who for nearly three decades has focused on the Bay Area. He currently writes for the San Mateo Daily Journal.
Also joining us tonight, Oakland civil rights attorney John Burris is known for representing Rodney King in a civil rights lawsuit against the Los Angeles Police Department. And since then, Mr. Burris has represented plaintiffs in a number of high-profile lawsuits against police departments across the state of California, including the Oakland Rioters, a case where a gang of Oakland officers were found to be planting evidence on citizens, which caused the federal government to invest and oversee the Oakland Police Department.
A 28-year veteran prosecutor, Jay Boyarsky, has served as chief assistant district attorney under Santa Clara County District Attorney Jeff Rosen since 2010. Before joining the office, Mr. Boyarsky clerked for the United States District Judge William Ingram.
A former San Francisco assistant district attorney and past member of the Board of Directors of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and like me, a past chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, and a certified criminal law specialist, Attorney Randall Knox has been a force to be reckoned with in San Francisco legal circles for some 35 years.
And last but most assuredly not least, Eugene Hyman served on the Superior Court of Santa Clara County for some 20 years. He is the first American to receive the United Nations Public Service Award. Judge Hyman helped create and serves in the field of therapeutic jurisprudence, a philosophy that advocates treatment for particular categories of offenders, including domestic violence, which is one of his specialties.
To all of our guests, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Now, let me start the conversation with you, Randy Knox. You're a defense attorney. You practice in San Francisco, San Mateo, and I think throughout the Bay Area. What was life like? What was it like in the trenches when Cheza Boudin took office? How did things change in the San Francisco criminal justice system?
Well, I mean, there was a little bit of a disruption, but the line deputies continued to do their work. Certainly at the beginning of his administration. And then you had COVID for a year where the courts closed down, and he really only had about a little more than a year to try to right the ship and get things moving. But as everybody here knows who practices criminal law or any kind of law, the courts were really not functioning at full capacity. So he started with a disadvantage, and things got progressively worse.
And how did they get worse? Did we see more liberal, more lenient offers towards wrongdoers? Were certain crimes not being prosecuted? Exactly what happened when you went into court that was different from before?
Well, I mean, there's some anecdotal stories about better offers, but let me just say also, if you were practicing criminal law in San Francisco, and if you knew what was going on in the streets, let me just say, the police were not his friend. And they went out of their way. I'm not saying they were trying to sabotage him, but they made his life unnecessarily more difficult.
But where did things really go wrong? What was the straw that broke the camel's back that brought this huge wave against his being in office? Was it timing or luck or all of the above?
It was a combination of things. I mean, clearly, if you go through San Francisco, you can tell that things did get worse on the streets. And I think that gave people the perception anyway that things were becoming unsafe. You had a lot of attention paid to like organized retail theft, which is not unique to San Francisco. But when they did that Louis Vuitton store, the whole world knew about it. Like that one guy, I'm not saying he was the only one who did it, but the guy at the Walgreens filling up the trash bag with a bicycle, that got nationwide play. And I think it got more attention than it deserved, because if you want to just be objective about it, let's not pretend that San Francisco is the only place that has these problems.
But the other side of that, and let me ask this to Judge Hyman and to Jay, how much of what we saw happening in San Francisco, select neighborhoods put under a microscope and told to the world, this is San Francisco today, how much of that was really a function of the prosecution function?
Well, since you're asking about the prosecution function, I'll answer before Judge Hyman, if that's okay, Judge.
Yeah.
I think what is interesting about what Mr. Knox said about these high-profile crimes that got a lot of national attention, certainly there was organized retail theft in Santa Clara County and other places. What was really unusual is I don't remember hearing the district attorney expressing a sense of outrage or condemnation about this lawlessness or the perception of lawlessness, which is unusual that you would have the prosecutor not railing against those sorts of things.
Now,
maybe he did, but I don't remember him doing that. And that's pretty unusual. And maybe Cheza Boudin is, as the LA Times recently called him, an inept politician, but he certainly didn't stake out any sense of outrage about these problems that certainly existed prior to his tenure.
But let me ask Mark, is this just a matter of pure politics? I mean, this was a primary election where you would expect a relatively conservative electorate, bad timing, bad optics. Was it if this had been the general election, or if the optics had been a little better, might Cheza Boudin have survived?
Before I answer that question, I wanted to show due deference to the judge and let him answer the question that was posed to him. I'm happy to do the politics. Since I'm the only non-lawyer here, I'm happy to stick to the politics.
Thank you. I agree with Mr. Boyarsky. Furthermore, I think his Mr. Bodine's big mistakes was that he didn't stay current with what the community was thinking. And as time went on, the community became less and less tolerant of some of his policies that catch and release, or not even catch, with respect to serial misdemeanors, that people who committed even serious crimes were being released, that he wasn't filing enhancements with respect to serious crimes, and that it was the cumulative effect of those things. And he just didn't read that the public was becoming disenchanted with his policies. In fairness to him, when he ran, he said what he was going to do, and he was consistent with what he was going to do. And I think that the community basically said, this isn't okay now, and he didn't change, and they did.
Dean, that's a good lead into the politics of it, because that's really what the judge just described is really a political problem. If you're perceived as being out of sync with what's on people's minds, it's hard work to readjust that, to be successful in convincing people, no, I really do understand what's going on. And he tried to say that, I think, on a couple of occasions, but he didn't really come in understanding. He came in with the perspective of, we've got problems with the criminal justice system that need to be fixed, not we have problems with crime that need to be fixed. And that's something where people will turn on you in a heartbeat. And the other issue I think he had is that I tend to agree that he was politically inept. I'm not sure he expected to win. We were talking about that before the show. But he, the way they elect people in San Francisco, it's almost like you sort of find yourself in office before maybe you're really ready to do the job. I also think it's important to emphasize what Mr. Knox said. There's a lot of anecdotes about cops, saying, well, there's no point in us trying to find the criminal here. They'll never prosecute him. There's no reason for us to take a police report. And that kind of stuff spreads very quickly without a lot of effort.
John Burris, we haven't heard from you yet tonight. Do you have a similar feeling?
Well, I have feelings about how he was running the office. It was interesting because I have a daughter that's in the office working there. And so she had sort of her own perceptions of how things were being run. But for me, from the outside, I had a couple of issues that were very important to me. And one was obviously the prosecution of police. And so from my point of view, he was on it. He just didn't know what he was doing. he wanted to do it, but he didn't have the staffing and the expertise to get it done. The other thing that was troubling, you can say what you want about it. He was having this conflict with the police, which in a way, it's one thing to fight about a case or two, but to have general conflict with the rank and file and or with the police chief about issues that should not be issues. And so I think there was a perception of competence that came from that. And then, of course, the issue that was a contrived point, two contrived points that he couldn't do anything about, one of which was the homeless question. All that was attributed to him. So he got, bad karma from that. But I think that to me was this perception in the Asian community that he was not looking out for them. Maybe he wasn't his primary responsibility, but we had all these kind of attacks on Asians around, and that created hysteria, and that mobilized itself into a real political energy that was, I think, was his undoing.
Let me turn take a.
Right, that's a very good. That's a great point that Mr. Burris makes about the surge in anti-AAPI hate crimes that we saw, and sort of a tepid response, and Mr. Simon saying maybe this guy didn't really think he was going to win. I'm curious to know what people think about the ranked choice voting in San Francisco, because there were three sort of mainstream Democrat establishment candidates, and then there was Mr. Bodine on the far left. So he, in some ways, he sort of happened into the job because of ranked choice voting. But you mentioned he didn't know what he was doing, Mr. Burris, sort of a lack of competence. That raises the question of why would you hire someone to be the chief prosecutor when they have no experience and no desire to be a prosecutor? I think that's a fundamental question that came to plague San Francisco, and that's one reason he was recalled.
Also, a part of that is his staffing questions were really unpredictable and didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, and I think it goes to the competency question of not being prepared for the job. He literally took his public defenders from his public defender's office and brought them over and gave them top positions. And these were people who had no idea how to prosecute and could not turn their brains over. And as a consequence, that you didn't get what you should be getting from the prosecutor's office on just basic crimes. And so,
that's so right. Absolutely.
You know, there's a famous quote from Tip O'Neill, "All politics is local."
Right.
What Mr. Burris just said is a great example. You don't turn the office over to people who haven't been there and alienate every other person who's working their way up the food chain.
The irony with Mark's comment about all politics is local is I would like to turn it over to our first caller, who is calling from Baltimore. Ted, welcome to your legal rights.
Yeah, okay. I got to make a few points that nobody's bringing up here. First of all, there was a concerted effort from before day one to get that guy out of office, and there was big-time billionaire Republican right-wing money behind it. There was a massive propaganda campaign. And did the guy even serve a full 2 years? I mean, they turned on him so fast, and they marshaled everything, and the media, the establishment media in the Bay Area, was totally complicit and complacent in this propaganda campaign. Something else that came into play that doesn't get talked about that much, but not only did you have anti-Asian hate crimes going on, but the other thing is that the political power bases in San Francisco, the machine that marshals voters and gets them to the polls, knows how to turn out the Asian vote, the Chinatown vote, and there are a lot of very conservative voters in the Chinese American mercantile community. These people would be voting Republican if San Francisco was not a Democratic machine town. And a lot of these people, they don't like criminals. They also, quiet as it's kept, many of them have some very provincial and racist attitudes. And this kind of energy and fear-mongering was marshaled and turned against Chesa Boudin. You can call San Francisco a liberal progressive town, but the fact is that San Francisco nowadays might be progressive on social values like homosexuality and marijuana, but basically because of the cost of living and the kinds of people that are moving to San Francisco that can afford to live there, is that it is becoming a right-wing libertarian town. And the homeless people are being vilified. And this was used with this massive billionaire deep pockets to get Chesa Boudin out of office. That's my statement.
Well, I welcome your statement. I'd like to turn it over to some of my guests to comment on that. I don't think I've yet to hear anybody refer to San Francisco as a libertarian town, but I would like to turn it over to my guests. And frankly, we frequently have the head of the Libertarian Party has called into the show several times. And if you are listening, you're welcome to call us up and see if you share that view that the city is basically turned libertarian. But let me ask Mark Simon, you've been astutely studying and commenting on Bay Area politics for many, many years. Give us your thought on that.
Well, San Francisco is far and away one of the most liberal, if not the most liberal cities in the country. But there's an important point I think he made somewhere in there, which is that there is an establishment. And there are, you know, it's a small town with a fairly small group of people who make and break candidates. And so I think it's worth saying that Mr. Boudin was never one of them, was never on the inside with that group. And that probably didn't help him any in terms of holding on to the office once he got elected. I think it was a surprise to a lot of people who would not, you know, who may not have gotten involved in the DA's race and may have wished that they had. And we'll see a whole different story, I think, in the next election. San Francisco also is can be intolerant of people who don't fit the mainstream. They're intolerant of intolerance, if you will. That if you're not part of the, you know, if you're not in the mainstream of political views, it's a tough town, I think, for some people, especially if they try to express those views publicly.
You know, Mark, from a political standpoint, let's assume all this is right about Chesa Boudin. Let's assume that people, their liberal politics stop at the courthouse door or at the jailhouse door. How do we then account for what happened a few miles south, where a very mainstream sheriff, moderate with some, you know, with some progressive leanings, seemed to have done a lot of the things right that Chesa Boudin did wrong, in a very with a very conservative electorate, very low turnout, so redshift in a lot of ways, a county that's famous for returning incumbents. Yet Carlos Bolanos, the long-term sheriff of San Mateo County, gets kicked out in favor of a more progressive candidate. How do we, isn't this an anomaly?
Well, no, I think it's in sync with what you saw in Alameda and to a degree what you saw in San Francisco. I got to stop you at one point. I'm not sure how conservative, certainly San Mateo County is more conservative compared to San Francisco.
I'm saying relatively speaking.
But certainly when it comes to criminal justice, isolated from other issues.
Well, and the DA in San Mateo County, Steve Wagstaff, likes to say, you know, criminals don't commit crimes in San Mateo County because they know we'll get tough on them here versus other counties. I suppose he'd like to believe that's true.
That's funny. Jeff and I seem to have a pretty vigorous practice, so I'm not sure that's altogether true.
Yeah. So it's about, I think it was a combination of factors that affected not just San Mateo County. We've had 5 years of stiff criticism of law enforcement and the way it conducts itself. And I think a general expectation that it needs to conduct itself differently. How that unfolds, I don't know if there's consensus on that, but there's a sense of a need for change. And that's compounded by a larger sense among voters everywhere on every issue that they're really fed up with the status quo, that they don't like a government that doesn't seem to get anything done, that doesn't seem to make a lot of progress in critical areas that are particularly important to them. And so law enforcement becomes an easy focal point for expressing that kind of dissatisfaction. And I think that's what happened. You know, the politics of it is his opponent, sheriff-elect Christina Corpus, was a 20-year veteran of the sheriff's department. So that didn't help him. If he wanted to say she's not qualified, well, then why did he keep promoting her? She was a captain. She never ran an anti-Bolanos campaign. Her slogan was, a sheriff you can trust. And that was essentially all she would say. That apparently was enough. And she talked a lot about transparency. And I think in return, the sheriff did not run a very effective campaign. I think he ended up with a surprisingly large amount of money still in his campaign treasury. And I think a lot of times, this is something I think a lot of candidates feel, but in his case, I think he acted on it. I think he couldn't believe he was losing to her. And that probably didn't help him run a vigorous campaign.
You know, one of the things that was pointed out to me, and I'm about to throw this out to you, Jay, is the prosecution function is important. And many, many people want to see change brought from within the prosecution function. But that doesn't mean bringing in something to instead of minding the store and then maybe changing the layout a little bit, we don't want somebody to shut it down. Is that really what was happening in San Francisco? Somebody losing track of the idea that they're supposed to be a prosecutor first, but maybe at a minimum balance the need for reform with the need for public safety. If is that really what was going on here?
Well, that's exactly right. As John Burris said, I mean, he brought in career public defenders to run the DA's office. And as Mark Simon said, the woman who unseated Sheriff Bolanos, she was a 20-year law enforcement person. She wasn't somebody that was a social justice organizer who was put in charge of a law enforcement agency, which is essentially what you did when you elected Chesa Boudin. The other thing I wanted to say, somewhat in response to our San Francisco expert who called in from Baltimore, who talked about this being the Republican-led recall. I think the registered voters in San Francisco are 80 or 85% Democrat, what, 6% Republican, and the rest are declined to state. I received 3 to 4 emails a day from the Defeat the Recall campaign on behalf of Chesa Boudin. They all started with the Trump Republican-funded recall. If I lived in San Francisco still, I lived there 20 years ago, I would have voted for the recall. And like Judge Hyman, I'm not a big fan of recalls, but I would have voted to recall Chesa Boudin. I loathe Donald Trump. I despise Trumpism. It's pathetic what has become of the Republican Party. I think every day about what happened on January 6th and how absolutely reprehensible it was. To say that it's Trumpers that were recalling Chesa Boudin, that playbook never gained any traction because it just wasn't true. It just was not true. It didn't work in San Francisco. And what's really interesting, if we want to look into the future and not just talk about this, the past election, George Gascon is the DA of Los Angeles. There's a process to recall him, much, much different to do a recall in a county of 10 plus million than 750,000. But all the emails that George Gascon is sending out stop the Trump-backed Republican recall. It didn't work in San Francisco. I don't know if that's going to work for him in Los Angeles. But this, what percentage of Californians voted for Donald Trump? They're very few, but there are millions of people disenchanted with the idea that we can turn DA's offices to people who have no experience as prosecutors and no real desire to act as prosecutors. Remember, George Gascon never practiced law, was never a prosecutor. He was a career police officer, which was interesting when Newsom appointed him. And same with Chesa Boudin. So this notion that this was a Trump recall, I think it's ridiculous. We should just say that it's ridiculous.
Can I jump in here just for a second?
I want to toss it first to Judge Hyman real quick, because Jay did throw down the gauntlet a little bit. We have about a minute to a minute and a half before we break. I wanted to ask you, how did you feel about the recall? Do you agree with Jay?
I'm very glad that he's gone, because I think his policies, as Mr. Barsky pointed out, were just horrible. But I'm unhappy with how it happened. As I indicated in my op-ed in the San Jose Mercury, there's too many recalls. I mean, I'm still remember my former colleague, Aaron Persky, who got recalled for a legal decision that he made where someone from the Stanford community, legal community, went after him, and he gets recalled. So I think that recalls are being used way too much as do-overs. Again, he said what he was going to do. He just didn't see it coming. But am I glad to see him gone? I'm absolutely glad to see him gone. What he was doing was just horrible. Well-intended, perhaps, but horrible.
Randy, about 30 seconds if you want to jump in.
Okay. The actual day-to-day operations of the DA's office did not change that much, even with the changes in staffing. I think Chase's biggest flaw was the fact that his messaging was so poor, and rather than pivoting to say, I'm going to focus on violent crime because it harms communities of color, he just doubled down on, I'm going to end mass incarceration. And that was a too simplistic approach to take. And I got to agree with Jeff, this whole anti-Trump thing did not play because people knew it wasn't necessarily a Republican recall, with the head of the Democratic County Central Committee being behind it and prosecutors being in favor of it.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I am Jeff Hayden, joined by tonight's co-host, Dean Johnson. Tonight, we're discussing criminal justice and what the look of the criminal justice system may be in the light of the last election. Our guests tonight are political pundit Mark Simon, retired judge Eugene Hyman, San Francisco attorney Randall Knox, Chief Assistant Santa Clara County District Attorney G. Boyarsky, and Oakland-based civil rights attorney John Burris. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can even call from Baltimore. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. That's the criminal justice system in the Bay Area. You are not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. And let me turn it over to Amy in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi there. I was on the fence about the recall. I did ultimately vote for it. And I feel like a lot of the feeling that people had was about the difference between what's being reported and what's the reality on the streets. I actually work overnight, and anyone who works nights in the city knows that there's literally no neighborhood you can leave your car in and not expect it to get broken into at some point. There's, you know, in every city, in every single neighborhood, there's roving bands of people trying cars, trying doors, using range finders to try to, you know, bypass locks. It's just a nightmare, and there's sort of this feeling that, oh, this must be how it is everywhere. Things have changed for us here in San Francisco. They must have changed for other people across the state. And it's just really not so. I've, over the last 2 years in the pandemic, I've been in other parts of the Bay. I've done the same thing in LA, and it's just not the case there. So we really are going through something very specific to San Francisco. I feel like people talk to their neighbors. They know what's going on, whether or not it's reflected in the statistics. I assume that's because people have just kind of given up on reporting property crimes because they know nothing will happen.
Amy, let me toss that to two of my guests. To the extent that you're aware, Randy, John, is this a matter of the police not queuing up certain types of crimes that may once have been a felony and now they're misdemeanors? Or is this truly a failure of the prosecution function, to the extent that you know?
I don't see this as a police, as John Burris. I don't see this as a DA problem per se. It's really the police unwillingness to really dedicate the kind of resources necessary to deal with these kind of street crimes. And I know that we have blue flu. We do have these issues that I had in Oakland when I was doing the Ryder's case. We know that the police can make a political judgment. Where it would come from, judgment is we're going to do this and we're not going to do this. And if there's a political ramification where it can hurt someone like the DA, they're clearly willing to do that. And I think that we should be mindful, in my own view, that a lot of what happened was this police unwillingness to enforce the kind of crimes that were public, that people felt threatened by if they weren't being done. And I, like myself as well, I've had my car broken into a number of times in San Francisco before Chestnut came in and subsequently after it as well. So I think it's more of a police problem and with a political undertone to really undermine the DA.
Well, then, you know, John, your comment, I think, leads into a bigger question that maybe we can open this segment with. We're nationally, as well as in San Francisco and California, we're seeing a spike in crime. There's no question that crime is an increasing problem. At the same time, we're seeing a broad movement towards progressive reform in DA's offices and in law enforcement. So we've talked a lot about what Chesa Boudin didn't do and what he did wrong. What can we do right? What can or should a DA or law enforcement do to face off against what seems to be a spiking crime problem? And that's open to everybody.
Well, what do you mean, Dean, when you say the spike in crime? Are we talking about a reality, or are we talking about a perception, and is the perception based in reality?
Let me throw it back to you with that, Jay. Are you experiencing the type of a spike in auto break-ins or retail theft that we've seen visually on television happening in San Francisco?
Some crime is up in Santa Clara County, and some crime is down in Santa Clara County over the last 2 to 3 years. Interestingly, property crime is down in Santa Clara County. The perception is that property crime is spiking in Santa Clara County. This is not a way to justify or minimize the level of crime. After all, when you're talking about crime statistics, the most important statistic is, are you a statistic, or is one of your loved ones a statistic? Nowhere in the United States is crime as high as it was when I first became a prosecutor in the mid-1990s. It's not as high as it was in the 1980s. It's interesting. Gallup does an annual poll. They've done it since the 1940s. And they ask Americans, is crime higher this year than it was last year? Did you know that every single year, the answer is overwhelmingly yes, crime is higher now this year than it was last year? But of course, if you look at crime statistics over the last 60 or 70 years, you see it goes up and it goes down. And it's rather low now comparable to other periods of time. Of course, as that caller that we just had described so accurately, when there is no cooperation between a district attorney's office and the police, and you have a understandably demoralized police force, understandable to some extent, perhaps not understandable in terms of other ways, and you've got no cooperation, and the community is left to sort of think, does anybody care? And you have a district attorney who really cared about mass incarceration, which is a significant problem. He cared about the rights of criminal defendants, which is a very important thing to be concerned about. But when he only was concerned about those things, there's going to be even more distrust from people on all sides of the political spectrum.
Yeah, you know, Jeff, I'm kind of surprised that you asked me about perception versus reality. One of my favorite statistics, in 1991, interestingly enough, about 18 years after Roe versus Wade, which is an economic issue, crime fell off the cliff. I mean, the crime rates had been rising for about two decades, and then they suddenly fell. Starting around 2018, crime started rising, and right now, between 2018 and now, homicides and violent crimes, especially gun-related crimes, are up something on the order of 23% in most cities, and that doesn't even count like the increases in crime in rural areas. So it's a reality. It may be different from city to city, but it's really there.
Well, then homicide rates have spiked in the last several years.
Yeah,
but they've spiked in red states and blue states. They've spiked in areas where there are liberal prosecutors, and they've spiked in areas where there are traditional law and order prosecutors. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, true. It seems to be independent of the nature of the existing regime. But then the question becomes, who's got the solution? The red states, the blue states, the red prosecutors, the blue prosecutors? Do we need more Chesa Boudins or more Corpus Christis? Or do we need Carlos Bolanos?
Okay, I can tell you who has the right balance. It's District Attorney Jeff Rosen, who just got reelected in a landslide when he had two actual opponents in a primary, and one was really well funded, kind of a Chesa Boudin clone. He got 17% of the vote. I mean, he was trounced. The other candidate was a disgruntled former employee fired for dishonesty, taking a more traditional law and order approach. He got about 22% of the vote. D.A. Rosen just had a landslide victory, and Santa Clara County is a progressive county. It's a Democratic county. It's different than San Francisco. It's kind of similar to San Mateo County. But the reason, one reason that our office is a great office and why D.A. Rosen is widely respected is it's not a binary, it's not an either or. It's not, do we want a just and fair criminal justice system or do we want public safety? You can have both those things at once. You can have reasonable, pragmatic reforms, but you can also take crime seriously and realize that particularly with violent crime, you need to send a message and there needs to be a deterrence. Now, I'm not claiming that we've got the secret recipe and we can make crime go away, but after the murder of George Floyd, we announced a series of bend the arc reforms, which we have implemented. Those are not going away simply because of Chesa Boudin's loss or the fact that Gascon is being recalled. So there's a good way to, there are bad ways to go about things and there are better ways to go about things.
Well, it is worth noting that murder rate's probably up because of COVID. Too many families are spending too much time indoors together.
That accounts for the, no, you're right.
Well, we saw a decline in residential burglaries because people were home. And so we saw a decrease in that. We saw an uptick in domestic violence, as Mr. Simon alludes, because people were home. But yeah.
And with people indoors and not looking out the window, their cars are getting broken into. Let me turn it over to Lindy from San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, it's Wendy.
Wendy, I'm sorry, but welcome.
Thank you. Should I turn off my radio?
Please do. We're getting feedback.
Okay. Okay, I'm a big Chesa Boudin fan, and so I want to give a little different perspective. I campaigned for him. I went and learned what a DA does. I read his website. I tried to understand what change make, how to make change. And really, crime is related to poverty, not to a, the DA is not a blame for crime. So I feel very upset that this panel is not more balanced in some of the facts and the hatred and the words horrible. It's a little alarming because I've lived in San Francisco a lot of times and none of the speakers, except from Baltimore, recognize my position in the recall. And I think recall is not good either. So have any of you read Chesa Boudin's website? He has done exactly what he said he was going to do.
Wendy, I'll give you that. He did do exactly what he said he was going to do. And from my own perspective, and I'll bump it to Judge Hyman, but from my own perspective, it really comes down to two different questions. One is this the person we want to be the chief law enforcement officer in San Francisco? And that may be a very different question than whether it was a good idea to jump in with a recall for somebody who was elected to do exactly what he was doing. And now perhaps a very different group of voters has a different view on it. But let me turn it over to Judge Hyman.
Well, thank you. As I said before, he did what he ran on, what he said he was going to do. And I viewed the recall as a do-over. Well, I voted for him and I'm sorry that I did. Well, I'm concerned about the recall being misused. I'm concerned about do-overs. I'm concerned about allegations of fraud with respect to elections in general. As I said, I think his policies were wrong, misinformed. He didn't keep up with the consensus in the community, and I think that was his undoing.
You know, but doesn't Wendy make sort of a point here? I mean, didn't Chesa get nailed for a lot of things that really weren't his problem? I mean, we see San Francisco has become almost a right-wing trope where you see pictures of the homeless on the streets, on posts on Facebook and so on. And homelessness is not a problem, that the DA is designed to deal with, nor is law enforcement.
Well, I disagree with you. And the reason why I disagree with you is because of drug treatment court, because of mental health court, because of all of these various types of programs that San Francisco, Santa Clara County, San Mateo County, and law enforcement is the start of this process. Law enforcement brings people into the system by making the arrest. He didn't meet with the police in terms of trying to get their cooperation, in terms of taking crime seriously because of the perception of the police that he wouldn't do anything about it. I just wish everyone would do their jobs. I wish the police would make the arrests. I wish the prosecutor would prosecute. And then I wish the judges would do their job and sentence appropriately and encourage people to participate in the various reform programs that these courts offer. These courts save lives. But unfortunately, too many defense attorneys, and not just PDs, tell their clients, don't go to drug court. It's a misdemeanor. Just plead guilty, pay a fine, and it's no big deal. Meanwhile, the drug problem continues. Meanwhile, the mental health problem continues, which also has a drug problem. So, yes, I mean, it's a cop-out for him to say, hey, I didn't create the homeless. I didn't create the mentally ill. I didn't create the people that addicted. I didn't create the syringes on the street. Part of being a leader, and the DA is the chief law enforcement officer of the county, is to get everyone to meet and to take care of business.
You know, yeah, Judge, if you were listening 2 weeks ago, you may have had a very different view. I'm about to turn it over to Randy Knox and John Burris, who may have a slightly different view. But what you were commenting, Judge, only starts when somebody's been arrested. And
true.
One of the big problems in San Francisco, per the two guests I had on 2 weeks ago, is that the city and its Department of Public Health have taken a real backseat and haven't taken a leadership position in what to do about the mentally ill, the chronically mentally ill amongst the homeless population, and have deferred instead to wait until a crime has been committed and charged and let the law enforcement community and let the criminal justice system deal with it, when perhaps it starts with a public health problem that should have been addressed long before those folks get caught up in the legal system. Let me turn it over to two of my guests that we haven't heard from a bit, Randy Knox, John Burris. How do you feel about this, about what Wendy brings up in favor of some of the reforms?
I was in support of the reforms, many of the reforms that Chestnut was trying to put together. I wasn't comfortable or confident that he was getting it done, in large measure because I thought that he didn't have a real good plan of operation, to get the job done, but also to make the public understand and appreciate what he was really trying to do. He had grand ideas, no question. They were grand, and I supported many of them. But I still have to deal with the practical component of getting the job done on an everyday basis, although I think that he got a missed a bad rap about whether the office was not running properly or whether or not there was less enforcement and prosecution in his regime than there had been in others. But notwithstanding any of that, it's still a matter of public perception and that he didn't do a good job of doing that. That might have been personality in terms of how it was. But the bottom line is, I don't think he had enough time. He was given enough time to get it done. You got to recall that the recall effort was being done the day he got elected. There were efforts being made to recall. And so he was being undermined from the very, very beginning. For whatever reason, that's what I saw and at the time.
Randy, you've been pretty active in San Francisco. How do you feel about it?
You know, I've got to disagree with the Honorable Judge Hyman on this because homelessness, mental illness, drug abuse, the criminal justice system has shown it's incapable of addressing those problems in traditional ways. I think the collaborative courts, the diversion that Jay was referring to, those are some alternatives. But you're not going to solve it with law enforcement alone. If you want to talk about the homeless problem, let's go back to Care Not Cash with Gavin Newsom. That was supposed to solve it. Once you stop giving them money and give them vouchers, they'll disappear. Well, they didn't. Now we've got this problem with fentanyl. If you want to get into politics as marketing and messaging, if Chaser had just taken one of the people who provide fentanyl that resulted in a death, even an unintentional death, and say, okay, that qualifies as involuntary manslaughter. Just to get the message across that we can't tolerate 700 people a year dying on the streets from fentanyl overdoses. And I know I'm going a little off topic here, but the cops aren't equipped to deal with mentally ill people on the streets. They're not trained to deal with those kind of folks. And like you said, you're right, the Department of Public Health, and there's a ton of services out there for people who are unhoused, who have dual diagnoses, but they're not incorporated into the whole structure with the DA's office and the police. One last thing, let me just say, in terms of property crime, everybody here, I'm sure, saw that burglary of the cannabis dispensary where the police sat there in the squad car and let people burglarize a place and leave. That is not Chesa Boudin's problem in the sense that he did not create it.
Definitely not his fault. That's a political statement.
Yeah. Following up on what Randy said, I think I agree. There, as much as we need criminal justice reform, there's really a dark side to a lot of the reforms that are being proposed. We're talking here about the DAs and law enforcement engaging in forms of social engineering and micromanagement. For example, Newsom has now proposed what is euphemistically called a mental health court, which is really homelessness court. People get picked up on minor crimes, and then they are sentenced to do treatment and counseling. Even the Judiciary Committee of the state legislature has put forth an analysis saying this is a problem because we're going to be forcing people into treatment that they don't want and sometimes that they don't even need. There is no complete and clean. There seems to be no complete and clean solution. As Jay said, I think we need a balance among solutions, but we need to realize that there are costs and benefits to all of them.
One of the things that people don't realize, the prosecutor sets a tone not only with prosecution, not only with the sentences that are meted out, but also with taking a public statement and being vocal about what's going on. And I just want to be clear about one last thing before I turn it over to my guest, because we really are out of time. And I did want to say we've invited Mr. Boudin and his office to participate in several shows. And unfortunately, it just hasn't happened. We did extend that invitation. We are essentially running low on time, and I did want to turn it over to my guest for any closing remarks. I'd like first to go to John Burris. John, take no more than 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, I hadn't prepared a closing argument here, but I do think that one of the things that's going on nationally is we are seeing that the public's sort of demand, of at least some public interested in changing the traditional DA's offices that we have kind of known them and to be more reform oriented. And that is important in putting together policies somewhat like what Chester's tried to do here. We saw that in Philadelphia, we see that in Chicago. And I know there's been the DA's office in Northern California, Jay may know this better, there's been a number of DA offices that are real challenges. And so I've been involved with some of those. But I do agree this, that the DA offices in many areas need to be more responsive to some of the more public reform efforts to keep people out of the system as the best they can. The same way I feel about the issues of what do you do with mentally impaired people, and they should be taken out of the system in some way. And so for me, that we are at a point in time when we can take another look at some of these issues. Chestnut, what he tried to do, he couldn't do it. I got it. He didn't have the right personality. He didn't have whatever was necessary. But others will and will try. And I'm hopeful that this is not the death knell on the part of DA officers to be progressive, to look at how you can change the paradigm that we have seen and historically that has resulted in a lot of people going to jail who shouldn't go to jail when there's no alternative systems in place to try to put forth better outcomes for them, as opposed to giving them criminal records and sending them off to jail for periods of time that is totally beyond what should be done. So in that sense, I do think that if whatever happened to Chestnut, that's on him. But I don't think we should give up on the idea that there's changes that can be made and reforms that can be made to give better outcomes to people who come in contact with the criminal justice system.
Jay Boyarsky, take about a minute.
I have to follow John Burris, because never in the history of going to court would I stand up after John Burris makes a closing argument and say, I agree 100% with everything that John Burris said. But I do agree with him. And the bend the arc reforms that we've instituted, that Jeff Rosen instituted in Santa Clara County, we call them bend the arc because of what Martin Luther King said, which is the arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Right. We're working to end cash bail, but that doesn't mean catch and release. That right. means you detain people who are a threat, but you release people that are not going to go out and just immediately do the crime again.
Absolutely.
We've stopped requesting fines and fees from indigent defendants. We wrote a software program, after all, we're in Silicon Valley, to expunge the criminal record of tens of thousands of people who can now say, I don't have a criminal record anymore. And the last thing I wanted to say, Jeff, is there's this silly notion, I think, that DA's offices and law enforcement need to be warring all the time like they are in San Francisco, or they need to be corruptly cozy. And we're proud that in Santa Clara County, we work professionally alongside our law enforcement officers every day. And they know that when they do a good job, we're going to say they do a good job, that we'll have their back in court. But they also know that when they break the law, we will prosecute them. And that's the way that the relationship between a prosecutor's office and a DA's office is supposed to be: comfortable and consistent and professional, but not cozy.
Randy Knox, take about half a minute.
Half a minute. Okay, we're trying to come up with easy solutions to complex problems. It's not possible. We're going to have a more comprehensive strategy on how to deal with these things that make people feel unsafe. And we can pick it up next week.
Mark Simon, half a minute.
There's a political uneasiness. It's evident at the national level, the fact that we can't seem to find common ground. So it's no surprise that it manifests itself at a local level in the way it's going to manifest itself politically more than anywhere else. First is in law enforcement areas, public safety areas, because that's something that everybody feels acutely about. So it's no surprise to me this is taking place. Where it heads is hard to say. A bad economy tends to make people more conservative. And there's some upcoming tests. San Mateo County, there's going to be a ballot measure in November to create a citizens' oversight commission over the sheriff's office. It'll be very interesting to see what happens to that. That'll be a real bellwether of whether this is really the kind of issue it seems to be right now.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Our program tonight has been produced by Dean Johnson and yours truly. Our guests tonight have been retired Judge Eugene Hyman, San Francisco attorney Randall Knox, political pundit Mark Simon, Chief Assistant Santa Clara District Attorney Jay Boyarsky, and Oakland-based civil rights attorney John Burris. And thanks to my co-host, Dean Johnson. And a big thanks to our guests for joining us. It's been most enlightening, and especially our thanks to all of you for listening in. And back at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.